I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is a Crowd podcast.
Welcome back to the French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Groves, former Scotland international and adopted Frenchman, Johnny Beattie, and five-time European Cup finalist, Benjamin Kayser, as we're calling him every week now, I think. We'll get on to talking about the Champions and Challenge Cup finals shortly after French teams did the double in those competitions for the first time since 1997. And we've got a Champions Cup winning guest from the weekend joining us as well a little bit later on with an incredible tale to tell. So we'll get to that as well. But we've also got some big news to not really break because it's not been announced yet, but we think, don't we, Benji, French rugby, the top 14, may be coming back to UK screens.
Well, we think actually the dreams and the hopes of all our precious, precious listeners have been answered. There's not a week that goes by without a message sent them that, how the hell do we watch top 14? Well, either you do like me, which is don't tell anyone, but
illegally.
Not illegally. I use French codes, but internet doesn't pick it up anymore. So it's okay. You watch it online. Then there's finally a channel over in the UK that sees the absolute exquisite spectacle that is top 14, that is going to get bigger and bigger until 2023. And they finally decide to show it. So my little finger tells me that somebody did. And I think that is particularly smart and well played. And I can't wait for people to showcase everything that we see.
Probably more on that next week. But Johnny, have you've submitted all of our CVs? Yeah, they're all
obviously a long time ago. Look, Benji's little pinky and my whole arm. I've been saying we're mad as mustard. We're keen as mustard. Look, it's been 2-3 seasons now that it hasn't been shown at all in the UK. And it's a bit desperate. Like, everybody knows it's one of the best leagues, the best French players, massive foreigners. And look, there's carnage in one way or another every single week. So it's good viewing. So look, I'm just delighted. Hopefully it's been picked up. And I know all of our listeners have been saying they're desperate to be back on their screens. So hopefully from next season in the UK and Ireland, you'll be able to watch it.
The only issue is that we're going to get called out for talking so much shit, because for the last year, we've been basically inventing everything that we've been saying. So there's no more, you know, don't let the truth get in the way of a good story.
We've got a new sponsor on board, haven't we, Benji?
We do, mate. We do. Listen, the French are known for their joie de vivre, obviously. Their poetry, their wine, but massive about their food. But yeah, we've got something for everyone to cook as a Frenchman. So the Meter is the world's first best wireless smart meat thermometer. My lamb shoulder has never tasted better. I can pretend that I'm like an absolute rock star. I can finally make my passport proud.
And Johnny, you're cooking like a Frenchman now, aren't you? Are you using the Meter?
I enjoy a Côte de Bœuf pretty much every weekend, which isn't easy to do. So look, it removes all the faff out of it. When I have French families over, they can maybe judge me for being a British cook, but this sort of passes me off as a French cook. I get it right every weekend now. So no, it's helping me in saving my bacon on my plancha at the weekend.
Absolutely. It takes all the guesswork out of cooking, whether it's in the oven or in the barbecue. And if you want to bring your A game to the table this summer, like Johnny and Benji, you can get your hands on a Meter with 10% off by using the code FrenchPod10 at Meter.com. That's the code FrenchPod and the number 10 at Meter.com. Raise the stakes with Meter and Le French Rugby Podcast.
Hello, I'm Geraint Thomas. And I'm Tom Fordyce.
And this is your official invite to come and join our brand new cycling club.
Now, good news, it's a podcast too. So you can come and listen to us, try and build this club from scratch. And we'll have a few familiar faces joining us for the ride too. Right, G, time to tell everyone what we've called this club.
Well, we thought long and hard about this, so we came up with a strong, original name that really stands out. The Geraint Thomas Cycling Club.
Yeah, I suppose it's easy to remember at least, isn't it? We will have new episodes for you every single Tuesday.
Come and join us.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Let's have a look at the European finals now then. And we bumped into each other at Twickenham on Saturday, didn't we, Benji? You were there pitch side for both finals. So did you have a good weekend with the fans at Twickenham?
Oh, mate, it was awesome. We'll talk about it. Ask me later how my week was, because I had a great week also. Pretty intense, but finally with some sort of London face-to-face interactions with, you know, I don't know, business, friends, mates, restaurants, whatever, and a shit ton of wine, obviously.
Don't tease us, Benji. Tell us now.
Oh, yeah, we can't wait. I can't wait. Get out.
All right, on Wednesday at lunch, I had lunch at the table at which the Queen had her 89th birthday. Hold Try to beat that one. They've got 4 football pitches worth of wine cellars in the center of London. It's a place like I've never seen before. It's 365 years old. It's going down to the like first, you know, tea and coffee were the hot things. Then it was spirit, and then wine became gold, basically. So it's just full of history, full of crazy knowledge, beautiful scenery. Everything that I like about England, because there is a bit of wine on top of it. It's like history, tradition, but very relaxed, very chilled, not snobbish at all. Full of historical heritage, and I had the best lunch ever.
What'd you have?
Well, I can't even remember, but I know that we drank some Bourgogne, which was absolutely outstanding. That I'm not a Burgundy guy, to be honest, and it was just to die for. And then to answer your question about Twickenham was exquisite. Not the best quality of rugby on either game, but 10,000 fans, the cathedral of rugby, Twickenham, both teams or 4 teams who properly went at each other. Challenge Cup final wasn't extraordinary in terms of rugby production, yes, but boy, did Montpellier won it. So I wasn't pitch out, I was doing the comms. And at the end for the French TV, we saw Guillaume Girardot and stuff. They were all in tears. Girardot was crying in the arms of Forletta, the loose head prop, the young buck from Perpignan, with Benoît Payog. Fufu Odraogo was absolutely in tears. Mohamed Altrad announced that he's going to stay in Montpellier for the next 10 years, which is good and bad. But, you know, it's always exciting. I promise you, there was genuine relief and happiness. And it was awesome to see. You could tell that Bismarck Duplessis was playing his last minutes of top-level rugby, and he was chuffed to get that title. And those just beautiful moments. And you genuinely saw it. Like, again, Cobus Reynac, André Pollard, 9 and 10 of only the world champions. And they were jumping like 17-year-olds. And it was just delightful to see. Really happy for Philippe Saint-André and all his staff and stuff. And so they did well. And then obviously on Saturday, then the game was bigger and brighter, not more extraordinary rugby. And we'll get into it after. But 10,000 people, boys.
How good?
That was genuinely good. And a lot of people absolutely pissed to their minds after the game, wobbling about, singing stupid songs, pulling their pants down, everything we like about rugby.
Johnny, any lunches with the Queen, or what did you make of the finals?
That's what you want to give you. Mine is going to be utter crap.
Remember what I said to you, don't get the truth and get away with a good story. Exactly. I had lunch with the Queen on Wednesday.
Embellishment. Picking up from last week where I said I was going to spend the week doing my deck and removing bamboo. That's exactly what I did. So it was nothing compared to what Benji's been up to. It's been extremely sad. I even had to give away tickets that I had for both games to mates. So got photos of them having beers and enjoying it and loving life. And look, watched it with my neighbours. Bizarrely, had a couple of beers, another Côte de Bœuf, another weekend in southern France. Nothing really changes. And like you said, Benji, like the actual, in terms of the spectacle, the rugby wasn't fantastic, but what it meant to them, like both sides at the end, you could see the absolute delight. Intermax, Dupont, like their confirmation, they're here. It's their time, basically, and absolutely was. And we'll get into the game at the minute. I wanted to ask you, Benji, going back to what you talked about last week about how you sort of had some regrets about not putting all out there or not giving it everything. For me, it looked like game plans abandoned and everybody just putting everything into physicality, fight, and wanting it more than the other side.
Yeah. Montpellier did a terrific job in the Challenge Cup final, but Leicester just did not play any rugby. I mean, even when they had penalty advantages and stuff, George Ford would still kick the ball in the corner and stuff. I just wouldn't really understand what was going on, because when they did play, they've got this Kelly guy who plays 12. They've got Matias Moroni, bloody hell, the Argentinian, who tackles like an animal. They've got the fullback.
Which I rate him as well, the young kid.
Mate, he's really good, incredible in the air and stuff. And I was excited to see them. Nadolo barely had a ball and all that. But so basically, I was just frustrated because I just felt they played with a little bit of a le frama, a little bit of handbrake in terms of
100%.
A little bit of a lack of... You know, I don't want to get scared. I don't want to take a risk. I don't want to take the chance to do it.
Eddie Jones, did it look like they've been coached by... And, mate, they kicked everything. So I was watching it thinking, if you're a Tigers fan, right, in terms of spectacle and what you want, their driving maul was insane. But then there was nothing off the back of it. I'm like, you've just demolished a French pack and you've got 30 metres of gain line. Do something with the ball. And they just didn't. It was the strangest thing, like you said. And again, like, I know they've got a good kicking game, but, like, they kicked the ball to death. I'm like, if you just... tried something a little bit different. I think they could have won, but I was delighted Montpellier did, because the journey Montpellier, but again, both sides are on a journey, but the journey Montpellier have been on, the confidence that they've gained over the past 2 months, the job that Philippe Saint-André has done, you could just tell when they got ball in hand in areas where they felt they could play, they played. And that was the difference.
The two teams who won are the one who just seized a little bit more the opportunity. Romain Tamac had one incredible pass and he nailed it. But even Toulouse didn't really take a chance. I mean, we were looking at the game from... I was pitch shy, so you know, you get the images all the time. And even when after Botia got sent off for absolutely murdering Max Médard, they didn't play. They didn't take a chance, you know? So I think there was a sense of, it's a final. We do not want to lose it. And we're gradually going to get there. But still, both teams who delivered and who seized the title at the end are the ones who, just when they sniffed it, or teams or players, just when they sniffed it, they seized that opportunity and it's well-deserved.
And you mentioned Botia's red card, Benji. Obviously, as clear-cut as it gets, pretty shuddering to all watching, let alone being involved in it. Should Maxime Médard have been removed straight away? Because he played
150%. 150%. So I was doing it for BT. We were bit side, but as soon as the game is on, you go up to a box so that we can have all the screens. And we could watch it inside or outside. And, you know, you still have your earpiece. In the earpiece, you see the live commentary, but the TV is 4 seconds later. So I was going losing my stuff. So I just took my earpiece. I went outside. And just as we went outside and we were walking to the middle, the hit happened. I swear to you, I heard a bone break from the stands. I've never heard such a full-on impact. It's like a tree, you know, a tree starts falling down and he goes, Krah! That's the noise that it made. I was looking at Max and I was thinking, please get up. Forget about the red card. I was like, I hope he's okay. It's a car crash. And it really got me scared. And to be honest, his head, you know, properly waxed back. He's on the floor for a couple of seconds. How the hell that in that moment, in that that minute maybe that it took him to change the decision, how the hell didn't they pull Max Médard off? I think that's really absolutely careless. And I don't understand how it happened. And the same thing happened a couple of minutes before or after. I can't remember, with the big second row, Arnold, who knocked himself out. Or I can't remember if it's the shoulder or something, but he stayed on the floor. Tried to get back up. And you know, you do those couple of steps. steps back, and he stayed in there because his brother got injured after 10 minutes of the game or something like that. So there's a sense of, we can't really afford to lose another lock or something. And he stayed on. And that was just, that pissed me off a bit, because I think you need to take care of the boys. And Max Medal was in serious trouble. And apparently he's fine now. And I'm delighted. Obviously, Botia didn't mean to hurt him. He tried to chop it in half. And you're allowed to do that, but just not that high.
And Johnny, hindsight's a wonderful thing. But apart from the red card, the incident, was it a selection gamble that didn't quite pay off? Because before the red card, Botti didn't really look like he was fit. I mean, I think we know how important he is. We may all have picked him, but he didn't quite look there, did he?
Look, the physicality and the edge that he brings, he's just so important to them. And I think if you're the coaching staff and he says, look, I'm ready, I can do this, you absolutely put him in. He's pivotal to how they play. And he's great. He is great every single week for them. And maybe it's just a case of him being undercooked, not quite having the right reaction times, the right sharpness. But look, if there's one bloke you don't want to be hit like that by, it's Botia. Because when he hits, he sticks, and he's so powerful and so strong and so low to the ground. And that, like you said, Benji, like everybody felt it here on TV, like everybody just caved and cringed instantaneously. It was such a big collision. And I actually thought the refereeing team did a really good job. Like, I think initially he was yellow carded for not being back 10 meters for the quick tap. Was that right?
Yeah.
So it was actually the team that was in the bus, the ref team that picked up and said, no, you have to go back and look at this. But look, 100%, he has to go off the pitch straight away. Like, that is one of the biggest we've ever seen. The protocols are there in place for a reason. The rules are there in place for a reason, to protect the headspace and to protect against these knocks. And look, I just hope he's okay now. It was absolutely colossal.
Ronan Nogara answered the question perfectly, didn't he? And I thought it was pretty ballsy of him, to be fair. He said what you said, John. He said, listen, it's probably my fault. He wasn't ready, but he's my star player. I wanted to give it a shot. And obviously he wanted to overcompensate maybe his few mistakes by breaking, one mega tackle that it hits one player, but it affects the whole Toulouse side. And Ronan Nogara almost raised his hand at the end, said that it's on him, really.
Look, that's it. We've all been in that position. You're undercooked, you're going into a game, you don't have your rhythm. You want to find your way in or make an impact because you're there for a reason. And yeah, massive hit. I don't know what's worse, the hit that he took or the 4-day bender he's just been on. I don't know which is going to be worse, but I just hope he's okay. It was a huge collision.
And we'll come on to some of the more interesting moments from the game a bit later on. But you mentioned the bender, some of the celebrations, from the negative to the positive, some of the celebration scenes were pretty special, weren't they? I mean, have you two ever taken ski goggles to a rugby game? Those shots of Peter Aki.
That picture, I think I would frame it. When he's got those goggles and he's getting champagne brought on him. But listen, how many times do we mention Big Joe on this podcast? Probably 25 times.
Every week.
Not only did he go steal the touch corner flag, but then he held it as a flag and he was there on the celebration. I mean, who does that? Nobody's going to tap on his shoulder. Mate, sorry, could you leave this? That thing is in Toulouse and he's held it the whole time. So the freak of nature, but legend of a boy that he is, Joe, I'm telling you, he will be leading that charge. Remember, I told you my business partner, Julien Marcin's cousin, and he told me Joe slept about half an hour in 4 days. He's just unmovable, that kid. And he will celebrate, but now the celebrations officially took an end last night.
Well, let's find out just how good those celebrations were then for Toulouse, and have a chat with a man whose rise to the pinnacle of European rugby and to the title of Champions Cup winner has been about as steep and remarkable as possible, really. Toulouse second row, Thibaut Flamand joins us. And are you still pinching yourself, Thibaut? Can you believe you're a European Cup winner?
Not really, no. still quite shocked about it, really. Still feels weird.
And we'll come on to more about your journey a bit later on, but we were just chatting about the photos we've seen of the celebrations, and particularly a guy that we mention every week on the show, Big Joe Tacori. Is he still going strong? Has he stopped yet? Is he still got the corner flag? Tell us.
I think he's stronger than ever. He's been leading the charge for the last 3 days. He's impressive, to be fair. He's impressive on the pitch, off the pitch, on the night out, on the sesh. He's impressive, truly impressive.
Talk us through the past few days, mate. As soon as that final whistle's gone, you straight on the plane back to Toulouse and partying in Toulouse, or what's been happening?
So first of all, after the final whistle, like, it was just a surreal moment. Truly special. Boy, you've probably heard that so many times already, but it really was, and still can't believe it has happened. But yeah, no, so we, it all happened really quickly, to be fair. We enjoyed a bit ourselves on the pitch, did a little, went around the stadium with the trophy for the fans and everything, went into the changing rooms, and bottles pouring everywhere, like music, everyone like screaming, dancing, taking pictures and everything. It was absolutely amazing. And then, so we headed to Toulouse straight away. But yeah, we did have a good time, like on the plane as well. And it's been really nonstop for like 3 days. So yeah, it's been huge, absolutely huge.
And did you have your ski goggles packed as well in your bag, or was that just Peter Aki and Charlie Fenwick?
No, I didn't. I wasn't aware of that thing going on. But yeah, they all were ready for this, apparently.
And your timing's been impeccable, because obviously France has just opened up. So bars and restaurants, you can actually get out and have a beer. So have you managed to get into the mixer in Toulouse and actually get out and mix with people and celebrate with everyone?
Probably not as much as we would have liked, but we did have a really good time. When we arrived in Toulouse, Saturday night, there was like an event at the club going on, and yeah, a lot of people, mostly like families and friends. And so that was great. And then the next day, obviously, all the bars were open. So everyone was like at some bars in Toulouse, chez Tonton, which is a famous one in Toulouse. And then we all gathered again at the... at a restaurant, like a nice terrace and everything. And we just stayed there for the whole day. Literally just stayed there the whole day. And that was great. Really good. Really good to share. And then yesterday we went to the beach. There was like a beach bar thing, and we spent the day there. And yeah, we could mix a bit with people and stuff. Like, yeah, as I said, like not as much as we would have loved, but yeah, it was still really good.
And Big Joe took the corner flag from Twickenham. Did you get a souvenir or not?
No, I didn't take anything physical, but yeah, it was funny to see him care. Like he wouldn't let go. He wouldn't let go. He kept him like on the plane. And yeah, he's a funny character.
I was right on the pitch when you guys finished, basically in that little corner when he got kicked out. It took him about 60 seconds to realize that he's won and that, oof, I need a trophy. And he turned around and he picked it up. It was like everybody's still jumping in the air, you know, hugging each other, and they couldn't believe what they've just done. And Joe, animal instinct, he's like, oof, I need to get myself a trophy because they're going to be a massive piss up and I need something special. And he already went to steal it. No, mate, it was absolutely spectacular. And to be honest, I think you can be proud, because if you and Guillaume Marchand and all those boys don't sprint really, really quick for that last ruck, where explain to me how did you guys almost cock it up again by thinking that the game is finished and there's still 5 seconds to go. I'm like, come on, not again. But you guys sprinted back and you did well. So listen, when you needed to deliver, you delivered that last ruck. BT Sport were trying to say that there were 700 penalties in that ruck. I didn't see any. And to be honest, you need to have a massive set of balls from Luke Pearce to actually blow that one there. But fair play, you were there at the right time.
Yeah, no, that was a really tricky one. Obviously, we saw that happening, and we all like sprinted in there because we thought, fuck, now this can't happen, surely. And so Romain heard, yeah, it's finished. But Peter was saying, you've got this left, so 10 seconds left. And Rom, I think, understood it's finished. So it was based on a language barrier thing. And so Rom asked for the ball to Antoine, and Toto passed him the ball. And then thankfully he did look at the ball and realized that it wasn't on. And fuck it, when we saw that happen, it was like, we have to throw the last bit of energy we have. Like, everything has to go into that ruck.
I'm listening to this guy, Johnny, and I think I'm going to have to push him down the stairs, because his English is absolutely impeccable.
You're finished, Benji.
You've got 10 years and then you're going to be stepping in my boots, right? I was the only guy who could speak decent English. You're going to actually, you know, tu vas me couper l'herbe sous le pied. Explain to me how a guy, my neighbor, there's two houses between us, is a guy called Max, who plays 10 and 12, who was with you at Loughborough Uni, who's now playing at Tunbridge Wells. And explain to me how I coach from time to time a guy, you know, who's 30, who plays in Tunbridge Wells, and then I'm speaking to you, and you just won the fifth star for the Stade Toulousain jersey for the Champions Cup final. I'm sure you could write a book about it, but how does that story go?
No, I think it's just a long-term vision, really. I've always wanted to be a professional rugby player, like since I was 10 years old. And all my life decisions were based on that. And so when I decided to go study in the UK, that was the reason, because it was the only possibility for me the only option to possibly have a chance of turning pro afterwards. And so, yeah, long-term vision. And then, yeah, a lot of hard work and fights. All the cliche things, but like, yeah, hard work, sacrifices, and I've been lucky to live different adventures, particularly the one in Argentina that really switched something in me. And I think I've been lucky to meet the right people at the right moments, and everything just clicked, really. But yeah, it's all been a lot of work for a very long time, like a very, very long time. And yeah, I'm just grateful that it finally happened, and I'm loving it. I'm loving it.
When you made that move to Loughborough, was that because none of the academies in the top 14, none of the academies in France would snap you up?
Pretty much, but like, I mean, I didn't even even ever considered going into an academy in France, because I was nowhere. I was playing fly half like at 18 in Brussels. Like I was farming. I had no chance. I tried to. There was a selection process going on at Stade Français, with like for under 15s, and it was at the time where like rugby was all about physique and everything, and so you know, you fill in a form saying okay, how much you measure, what's your weight and everything, and the guys just replies straight away like, don't bother coming, like we did, he's not in the criteria we're looking for, so it's not going to happen. Staying in Belgium was not an option because the rugby, like the way they play rugby, was not what I was looking for. I was looking for something more serious and more professional. In France, it was either like studies or rugby, and to go into rugby you must have like, you needed to have like a certain level or be like in the Pôle Espoir or Pôle France or already the academy setup. And the UK was the only option with universities having a lot of teams and having playing like have teams that are playing at a good level, and yeah, so that's why I decided to go to the UK really.
You mentioned it there, you were a fly half.
Yeah.
Played in the Loughborough fifth team as a fly half to begin with, then you moved to so how does the move to second row?
I was playing fly half until the moment I joined the uni. So at uni, I played, this is the moment where I started to play second row. But there was a tricky one actually, because when I arrived at the university, so there was some selection process going on to enter the club, which I wasn't aware of at the beginning. So I was like, I've chosen a university to play rugby. I might not even make it. So I'm glad I did make it in the end. But the selection process was divided between forwards and backs. And obviously, at the time, I was a back, but knowing I had more like the size of the height of a second row. So I went to see the first team director. I was like, listen, this is my context. Like, what do you reckon? And so I started going in the forwards thing, and then kept and then started playing the second row since then. And at the beginning, it was quite special. Like, it felt like starting a new sport, really, because obviously I was playing in very different positions on the pitch, very different scenarios. But it was great to have like my experience of playing fly half, like the, you know, when you do like a little pot of three forwards off a ruck, like I was playing them like a 2v1, trying to play the ball as much as I could. But since then, I really, really enjoyed it, really. I'm not missing playing fly half. Like, I really enjoy playing second row. So yeah, happy days.
A hell of a story, mate. And to jump then from Loughborough into Wasps, where you had some game time, and then obviously the scouting network at Toulouse picks you up, phones Hugo Moulin, says, you have to look at this guy, bring him over, you sign, and a year later, you've won the biggest competition in Europe. Like,
still can't believe it.
It's absolutely like something that I for 16 years tried, got absolutely nowhere year, and you've nailed it in year one or two. Like, it's insane. How does it feel? Like, I know you're in a team with Dupont and Intermac, and it must feel almost like it's been very easy, and it must have come easy, but you now must look around and think, what else can we do? Look at the crop of people and the players we've got. How exciting is it to be part of it all?
It's amazing. It's an amazing feeling, and like it's obviously a really, really tough thing to do. But yeah, when you look at the quality of the players and the depth of the squad that we have, like we do have a chance to take a good shot. And yeah, it happened. But I think there's just a really good group of guys. And I was really surprised actually when I arrived in Toulouse by the way the club is run. I think that's one true power that the club has. And well, obviously I haven't played in 30,000 clubs in France or Europe, but like it seems to me that it's a very special club. And at the beginning, I was quite impressed really of how the club was functioning and running. And I think I'm starting to understand how the club is winning so much, because it truly is a special club.
And we've all mentioned the journey there. It is, Benji said a film will be made about it. It probably will be one day. It sounds incredible. But the way you've had to come over to England, back yourself, graft, Johnny mentioned there, Nottingham, you play at Wasps for a year. You've clearly had this self-belief all the way along. I know you've been celebrating for 3 or 4 days. It probably hasn't sunk in properly yet. But have you had a chance to just sit back and reflect a little bit, or speak to those close to you and just all that graft that you've been through, that journey, and have you had a chance to reflect?
On moments it's when big things happen, like 3 days ago that I really can look back and say, wow, this happened when I joined the club here. I was like, oh, okay, so this happened as well. But yeah, at the same time, like it's, so you mentioned self-belief, and I think that's something for some reason I've had for a very long time. And I remember actually when my, it's actually a bit funny story, but like I remember my first ever game for Loughborough Fifth. So I was on the bench, so in the fifth team as a second row. So it was really the last resource for the club. And for some reason, I was in that bus going to the game, and I was looking by the window, and I was like, it's not a vision, but I just thought like, I'm in this position now, but for some reason, I know that in my final year at Loughborough, I'll be in the first team, and I'll be thinking of that moment where I was on that bus for my first game being on the bench in second row. And for some reason, it did happen. But like, I don't know, I just believed it. And yeah, I think it's something that is very, very powerful to have the self-belief. And I think that's something that I really, all the power, the mental power, that's something that I really kind of like, obviously not fully discovered, but saw like more of it when I was in Argentina, where I saw like how if you could play play with yourself and understand how you are and how you need to be to achieve things, and things do happen afterwards. And it's truly amazing. So on these moments, I do reflect on what happened. But yeah, hopefully there'll be some more nice memories to make.
You mentioned that year in Argentina a couple of times. As a second row, when you were at Loughborough and then you went to, it was Newman, wasn't it, in Buenos Aires?
Yeah.
Was that a really pivotal, formative year in your career?
Oh, 100%. I think that was the most decisive year of my life, basically. Not just logistically, but on a personal level, more than anything. But yeah, it was... That whole year was an adventure, really. I mean, I arrived in Argentina. I didn't have a placement. I didn't have a place to stay. I knew no one. The only thing I had was the contact of three coaches at Loughborough. So George Shooter was coach at Loughborough. He knew very well Marcos Ayaza from Leicester, who did play, who used to play at Newman. So he put me in contact with Marcos Ayaza, who put me in contact with the club. And so the only thing I had arriving was a rugby club and the manager of the club picking me up at the airport on my arrival. So that's how the whole year started. And then just being like, you know, being by myself, like for the first time of my life, not following like, you know, school hours or uni courses or I just like had the occasion to do what I felt and what I wanted. And that was quite special. And then like, so I did, eventually I found a placement and the rugby club went really well and everything. And then, yeah, just kept having that self-belief and wanted to work really hard. But also like the way I saw the people playing rugby in Argentina was really special. They were, because I realized at some point, like, okay, I'm working this hard, but like on the pitch, I'm not really enjoying myself. Like I'm putting maybe too much pressure. Like it's not going that well. And I saw my friends who were like not as serious and not as concerned about it, but they're just having a great time. And yeah, have a good game and everything. And so this is where I started thinking, oh, okay, maybe I need to change this and that and approach the thing like this and not like that and blah, blah, blah. And so the mixture of like the good physical preparation I had, the mental switch I had during that interseason, I started moving up in the teams and enjoying myself much more. And everything started switching towards enjoying myself and trying to contribute to the team and have the best time possible. And then yeah, I went through the teams and everything kicked on from there.
How old are you?
24.
Bloody hell!
Some life,
mate. You've got a lifetime of memories. It's absolutely phenomenal what you've done, mate. It's pretty impressive. It's great to see that you're so humble by the fact that, you know, you just learn everywhere that you go and you need to get better. And how do I get better? I learn from others. And there'll be loads of guys who come from professional setups who rock up in Newman, because I've been to Newman, to Marcos. I played with him 2 years at Leicester and I was there for his wedding. Went to visit the club.
Oh, amazing.
It's not the same. It's beautiful. It's all wooden cabins everywhere and stuff. But yeah, it's amateur rugby from Argentina. And, you know, they don't touch it. They look at the weights, but they don't touch them. And it's a completely different mindset. And so for you not to be, you know, to like be snobbish or whatever, say, what is this professional setup? And you just went there to get what you wanted, to build yourself as a human, as a man. And then obviously that was going to replicate on the pitch for you. And fair play to you. It's well deserved. You just worked hard for it and now you're getting the results.
I've always believed that there's a lot of things to take from every individual, really, from any person, any situation. And from Argentina, I definitely took a lot. There was a lot to learn. And as I said, like more in the way they approach the sport and the passion they have, the fraternity, all the human values that they had. It was really embodied in the club. And it was amazing to be part of that and to be part of that family, really. And I think it was the first time, like as a not full grown up, but like, as a more mature person that I was playing in a family. You know, the love of the shirt and the passion for the game and everything, that I've lived moments there, like some emotional things. And that's some things that we talk about with the two Argentinian players and in the Toulouse squad. And that's something I've told them a few times, like I've lived some emotions I've lived there in Argentina are the most powerful ones I've ever lived in my life.
And you mentioned throughout all of this journey, you always had it in your mind that you wanted to get back to the top 14. How did that move come about? And Toulouse is about as special a club as you can go to. So how did the move to Toulouse come about? Was that the perfect one for you?
So when I came back from Argentina, I had my 5-year study to do. Then I was looking to go back to France, but it didn't really click for a few reasons. But then Wasp approached me, and then finally, after a few months playing at Wasp, I met Pierre Broncan, who was an ex-Toulouse coach and working at the time at Bath as a defense coach, I think. And yeah, so we met at the warm-up before. So we were playing at home against Bath. And so I met him at the warm-up. I was like, oh, yeah, you're French. Okay, yeah. So I didn't know who he was. And so we met. We had a little chat at the warm-up. Then the game happened. And then we stayed in contact a bit on LinkedIn at the beginning. And then we exchanged our numbers. And he said, yeah, if at some point you want to come over to visit the training center or, you know, have a chat at some point with pleasure, blah, blah, blah. And the occasion happened. So I had a little injury. So I went to see him. And then so he spoke to Toulouse about me. And then I remember receiving that that message from Hugo, I think it was in November 2019. So, and he sent me that message. Yeah, this is Hugo from Toulouse. If you're available for a quick chat, we'd like to talk about your future. So yeah, receiving that text was magical. But yeah, it was just actually when I re explained the story, like, it's actually crazy how quickly everything happened from Argentina to Loughborough to Wasp to Toulouse, like in literally 2 years. Well, now it's been the same gap between 2 years ago and now winning the European Cup, but everything happened so quickly.
How angry is Broncan going to be now that you're at Toulouse and he's at Cast and he's the head coach there? He's going to be raging that he gave you a leg up in Toulouse. Mate, it's awesome. It's an amazing story. I wanted to ask you simply, what countries are you qualified to play for internationally? You mentioned Belgium, you've mentioned England, and obviously you're now in France. So where are you qualified to play? If you're going to, like, you seem like such a level-headed bloke. I've commented on your game so far this year. Like, I think you're destined for massive things if you keep going the way you're going. So which way is your head? Like, if you're looking at international honours, which I'm sure the way you've talked about being on the bus for the fifths at Loughborough and fighting for higher honours, I'm sure it's only going to go one way. Which way is your head leaning? Where would you like to represent?
No, I'm French. So my dream is to play for France. It's always been my dream. It's a dream. It's an objective. And yeah, I hope it'll happen one day.
Well, mate, I saw this morning Fabien Galthié is drafting a 60-man squad for Australia, so keep your phone on. Coming into Toulouse and being surrounded by legends, like the legacy the club has, the history, the trophies that they've won, but also in your position, you come in, you come off the bench in a cup final, but you've also can undertaken an apprenticeship underneath Joe Tacori, who's probably old enough to be your dad, and the Arnold bros, the twins, who are two of the best in their field. So they must add completely different things, but those guys and the different things that they add, what are they like to be around and what are you picking up from them? Because they're absolutely world-class and they're superstars.
No, it's so beneficial, but you cited the players in the second row, but there could be so many. Like, I really like working with Jerome Kano as well. There's so much to learn from all these players, but yeah, from Tacori, I think I love his human approach to the club. Like, he's a true, you've probably heard that a few times, but he's the father of the club, where he's got the great values and an impressive human, more than an impressive player. Like, he's truly impressive, and it's great to be around him and to see how he approaches things, how he talks to the group, how he leads the group, how he goes up to the coaches, talks with them, and maybe confront them at some points. But at the same time, you know, he's a team member. Like, he's good in the changing room. Like, he's good on the celebration. Like, he's just everywhere. So it's absolutely amazing to be around him and the two other brothers as well. Like, two great characters as well. And perhaps a bit more my profile of player. And it's great to be learning from them, especially like all the Lila. That's a massive area of improvement for me in terms of calling the line out, and so it's great to be around them to learn from that. And even in the game style, in the activity they have on the field, like, it's great to see how they play, how they approach the certain aspects of the game, the level of combativity they put in the game.
We have to just quickly ask you about Joe. I mean, we've spoken about him already. We've spoken about the celebrations. You mentioned how impressive he is in all those different arenas. You mentioned it yourself on a night out. You've got a lot of self-belief. Can you keep pace with Big Joe or not?
Honestly, being totally realistic, I think it's very hard to keep pace with Joe Curry. He is a machine, honestly. I don't know how he does it, honestly. He just smashes it. He's too good.
Someone told us that gin was his kryptonite, didn't they?
I think it was Sensus Johnson who said that. But I know for a fact that Sensus Johnson would buckle in front of Joe Tacori. So he's probably saying that out of pure jealousy. Mate, I've tried many, many times. He will wobble, but he will never fall.
he's impressive. Honestly, he fire. Drinks anything, anytime, any amount. He's a machine.
In terms of this week's celebration, mate, give us the podium. Who are the three that have gone the hardest and ended up in the worst state? Who's been your gold, silver, and bronze? We've seen Pita, we've seen some of the celebrations, but who has properly let loose and celebrated this the most?
One of them that actually comes to my mind is Yannick Huyut. You probably saw the pictures of him when we left Toulouse before going to London. Like, he was leading the charge. Like, it was impressive. If you haven't, there are some pictures on internet. It's absolutely impressive. He's a great character, and he's really good friends with Joe as well. Like, they're quite similar on that aspect. But Joe has been very, very strong. Cyril Bay as well has been doing really well. Has been smashing it a lot. Romain Tamac as well, who has been really good. Richie Arnold as well. Now, the two brothers, actually. There's a good group of like 10, 15 that hasn't stopped for like 3 days. it's impressive. Yeah, it was just nonstop for 3 days. And yeah, I love it. I just love it.
Well, thanks so much for coming on, Timo. It's been amazing to hear about your journey and the celebrations. And judging by the looks on Johnny and Benji's faces throughout this, it's been like listening to a film, really, if that's possible, a film script. So sign us up. We'll invest in the film.
I'll watch it. Yeah, definitely.
Thank you very much for having me on. It's a pleasure to meet you guys. And yeah, hopefully see you soon. Thank you very much.
And on top of that, he's polite and nice.
He's lovely.
Freak of nature, this guy. Well done. Take a bow, mate. Well, bloody hell.
Congratulations, Steve.
Thanks for coming on, mate.
Enjoy the rest of the celebrations. That was awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
My man.
What a boy. Benj, you're out of work, mate. You keep going until he retires and then you're done.
1,000%. He's only 24. He's got a shit ton of stuff. I thought I traveled, just, you know, had a vision in his head. I think that's absolutely outstanding. It just proves, you know, that the bigger men make bigger players. And then that's really what's got him there to his level. It's his dedication, that resilience, that graft with a pretty level-headed. He mentioned that he kept up his studies and stuff. It's smart, a dream come true story, and it's bloody brilliant. Fair play for Toulouse for spotting. Sure, I mean, yes, of course, he's a very good player, but it's not like you spotted, you know, the Eden Elizabeth. You weren't going to look, you know, for the ginormous sort of over physical second row. So you also had to spot his ability of ball handling, his ability in the line out, his ability to cover a lot of ground, and his ability just to be a smart dude on the pitch. And that's what they spotted. Well done.
That is it. It is his smarts. That is exactly why he's now standing. The fact that you can convert from standoff and become what I watched him against. It was CAS Toulouse maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago. I was like, that kid's going to be in the French team. He can call a line out. He can ball. He can offload. He can pass. He can run. He can do everything. And he's a smart, diligent, hardworking kid. He's amazing. Like, unbelievable story. Mate, he's 100% going to, I don't want to put too much pressure on, but if Fabien Galthié is looking at the next generation, who to bleed in for the next potentials for 2023, mate, 100%. If you're looking for a smart bloke that can pick things up quickly, absorb different skill sets and become a leader quickly, there's your man. What a boy.
But also, in this ultra professional era, we won't see many stories like that again, Benji.
Exactly.
As an inspiration to guys playing at Tunbridge Wells or wherever they're playing, like so many, when he was detailing his story there, so many chance meetings before the game Bath with...
I don't believe in chance. I really believe in preparation, meeting, and an opportunity.
Oh, he's taken his chances, hasn't he? But the way it's kind of mapped out.
And he's built them. He's pushed for them. How many guys would have got to Loughborough and after 6 months would be like, listen, I'm on the bench playing second round of 15. I'm gone.
You'd be on the beers.
And they just give up. Or you just give up and you leave. But on top of that, he stuck with his studies. And the only reason why he went to Argentina is because he had that year away that he needed to do. That means he got to third year of his studies. So he still passed his grades and all that. Then to go to, he could have gone anywhere in the world. If you're a bit of a, not a bit of a wanker, you know, but if you're like a 21-year-old and you want to have a fun, I don't think Argentina will be your go-to. I would love Argentina and stuff, but you need to know your rugby. But you could go to the States, you can go to Australia. In England, everybody goes to Australia. Everybody does like 6 months in NZ or Australian stuff because there's the sun and there's no language barrier. He decided to actually challenge himself with another language barrier because he's not even a full English speaking from the get-go. So he's just, yeah, smart, brave. And like you said, Tim, if it can show to anyone, if you have a dream and you believe hard, rugby is one of those sports where a few different pathways can get you there, right? Outstanding sort of technical ability is absolutely necessary if you're going to play certain positions, 9, 10, and whatever. For others, let's face it, you can compensate pretty quick.
And so you could basically start with one sport and go to another. What you need to have is a massive heart, a will to work, be open-minded and humble enough to actually get, you know, be resilient and dust yourself off and go again. And that's what he's done. So I totally agree with you. I think it's a brilliant, brilliant example of how rugby can be full of different characters, because big characters make better players. They really do.
And just going back to the game, he was there at the end, Thibaut, to seal the deal. We talked about the red card earlier on. We shouldn't have been surprised, should we, about how well La Rochelle coped with being down to 14 men. Obviously, there's the story of Ronan O'Gara when he was at Racing, the top 14 final, 2016, Maxime Machinot gets sent off. They win. Was any part of you surprised by how well they dealt with it?
I think there's two things. If you position yourself as in La Rochelle seat, that you're like, oh, how do we deal with this? But there's also the main mistakes that all the teams do when they're one man up. So typically Toulouse, it is like, we need to overplay, overstretch ourselves, try to kill the game within the next 10 minutes. Whereas he got expelled the 25th minute. There's still a bloody long time on the clock to go, right? It's not like it's the last moment. And the classic mistake is that, oh, just chuck the ball around. It's one more. One more is a hell of a lot, but it's not that much, you know? And so the classic mistake, I think, that what that Toulouse did well is that they basically stuck to their plan. They played absolutely identical, whether there was one man warm or not, but you could know that in the back of their mind that you're going to grind them. There's going to be the extra effort element and this and that. The only thing that I thought they could have done is that there's one or two opportunities where you could just play the overlap that's in front of you, expose yourself a tiny bit more. That's why we saw La Rochelle coping so long. So basically, I think La Rochelle did really well, but Toulouse on purpose did not try to change anything to their strategy. And they just picked, and they were patient enough and smart enough to pick that one opportunity they had, which was that beautiful pass of Romain Tamak and then Tolo Fua back inside to Malia. But let's not forget that there's a crazy, amazing, good cover tackle from Geoffrey Doumerou, who picks up Chelsea Colby a meter from the line where everybody thought he scored. And if he scores that in the first half, then it's a different game.
I think as well, you have to congratulate some of the key players from La Rochelle. So even a man down, like you think of the performance of Antonio, like scrum time around the pitch, the physicality, Bougarit, Doumerou, you mentioned, like, some of their boys were absolutely phenomenal. And I think we touched on it right at the start. It wasn't I think if it'd been a classic top 14 game, it would have opened up and Toulouse maybe kicked into another gear, start pushing offloads, find gaps, and they run away with it. But it was such an arm wrestle. It was such a dogfight. Like, the contest on the ground, massive men trying to slow the ball down, everything was a shit fight. And La Rochelle stuck in it. Like, the difference in the end for me came down to a kicking battle where Intimac takes away 100% of his shots at goal. And West, unfortunately, lets a couple slip. Otherwise, it could have quite easily have had a 14-man La Rochelle side playing with 60 minutes. They could have come away and won that game. Like, the dog, the organization, the structure, and the scrap that they showed to stay in it with 14 men for that length of time was hugely impressive. They'll take away quite a bit of belief. Actually, do you know what? Like, we can match it. We've played Toulouse before in top 14. We absolutely can do this. They've got a side that they're not going to lose many players over the next season or two, I don't think. Many key players, they're going to add a bit of talent. So look, they should absolutely take confidence from where they've been, the grind that they've been in, the fact that they probably could have edged it even with 14 blokes. I think they'll make a real tilt now at this top 14 title, coming away from that thinking we can really do this.
And you mentioned that Johnny Ehi West, he was superb in the semi-final.
Mate, he's amazing.
He signed a new contract after that semi-final as well. It feels cruel to mention him, but obviously he did leave 8 points out there. I suppose the style of fly half that he is not one that you would ordinarily look at Ronan O'Gara and think those two, he's not the same kind of player as Ronan was. So,
but you say that, but Ronan O'Gara has obviously changed and evolved and been exposed to different cultures and different ways of playing. He's been at Racing, he's been at Crusaders. So it's not the kick, clap, kick tight corners, kick your goals rugby that we saw in Munster. Like, Ronan O'Gara has added masses to himself and his rugby IQ and his knowledge. And look, I cannot sit here, and Benji can't, we can't criticize kickers. We've never put ourselves in that position or taken on that kind of pressure. It is something we've never done. And I love him as a player. I think he's absolutely terrific, and quite rightly, as the shift has gone, there's a lot of non-GF players moving out of the top 14. I think he's pivotal to a lot of what is absolutely great about La Rochelle. And look, it's one of those, it's a big moment and a massive platform, and it's just slipped, but he's converted 99.9 of every other chance he's had in the top 14 with La Rochelle since he's been here. So it's one of those games, it's gone now. But as I said, with him moving forward, they've got a massive tilt now at the top 14 title. I think they will take a lot from that game with him because he's outstanding, and there's no reason why they can't kick on and win that one now.
And I don't know what more we can say about him, but Antoine Dupont was named European Player of the Year after the game. He stood out again, didn't he, Benji?
I actually don't think he had the best game, but because there was nothing really much for him to do, to be honest.
He was industrious, wasn't he? Made a lot of tackles, carries, that kind of thing.
Yeah, he's always, I think it was more to celebrate his entire competition. And to be fair, he's added sort of a few strings to his capacity. You're always asking yourself, where the hell is he going to stop? I mean, he can tackle, he can cover tackle, he can compete on the floor. And I'm thinking, yeah, even in a game that's tight and it's not particularly open, you just need the grafter. He can be the grafter. If you want the electric off the base pace, dynamic number nine, he can do it. If you want the Mike Phillips who can hand off, you know, big fellas and actually create breaks on his own, he can do it.
He's a freak.
And now his kicking game that Toulouse used a hell of a lot to get out of their own half and stuff was spot on during the whole game. And those little key moments when La Rochelle did not get out of their half as well were problematic. So apart from the tiny little brain fart that they had again, 4 seconds from the final whistle of the biggest game of their lives, he did outstandingly well. You know, of course, he's a beautiful European Player of the Year.
Did you see the offload that he threw when he was being taken out like the trash by Big Will Skelton? Did you see that? Again, just the presence of mind, the timing, the rugby nouse, mate, he's got everything. And look, from 1 week to another, we talk about his acceleration or his handoff or his tackle break or his kicking game. And you just like, you think you're going to run out of stuff. And then this week, he played like an extra back rower. Like those times we played against Mike Phillips, you'd sometimes see talk about being an extra back rower for a laugh because he was tall. But Antoine Dupont actually this weekend was smashing boys, competing for ball, repeat efforts, getting back to his feet like a proper set, like just insane. And that's it. It's how many different sides can he show his qualities? He can do absolutely everything on a rugby field. And that's why maybe it wasn't the most standout, glittering performance, but absolutely you can appreciate what he does on a rugby field. Every single different week, there's something to applaud. He's just superb to watch. And quite rightly, it wasn't the most spectacular final, but absolutely, quite rightly, the European Player of the Year. He was terrific again.
We mentioned the Challenge Cup final a little bit earlier on. You were there, Benji. Your old club, Leicester, should they have taken the points a little bit more? They dominated in the forwards for quite long periods. Will they look at it as one that got away?
I'd say so. Yeah, I'd say so. It's not so much taking the points. I just thought they could have taken the chance and attack a little bit more, because when they did, they were actually pretty lethal, put Montpellier into a world under a world of pain, but they just didn't convert their opportunities. There's like a passage of play of 10 minutes before halftime where they really are pounding on the line. And just when you repeat that and repeat that and repeat that, that's when I saw Eddie Jones sort of league style type of running and stuff. And that's what I thought was very impressive. But look, it's like they absolutely demolished them in the front. And I don't know if you remember, but at one point, there's a driving maul, a dummy driving maul, and they actually shifted to Ben Youngs, who did really well when he came on, added a lot of pace to the game. And he's trying to find Ben Youngs, went full tilt at the back of the line out where everybody thought it was driving maul. So the defense of Montpellier was already a little bit consumed in there. And he's just looking for Nadolo at the shoulder, except he looks, and Nadolo is 6 meters behind him. So he gives it behind, and Nadolo, tugudum. Dugudum, dugudum, boom. So you're like, you know, all that effort and all that grind to actually go through something, but you're not doing things in the most efficient way. So it was very frustrating to see them do that. I mean, I was commentating, and next to me there was Benny K, Hugo Modio, and I was looking at Benny. I was like, bloody, I was like showing my foot, like, tell him to stop kicking. And he's like, well, you know, we can't do anything about it. So no, it's a shame. But listen, in the long run, Leicester still, it was their first final at all for the last, 6 years or 7 years or 8 years or something. So it's a fantastic way of gradually getting back at it. Maybe Borthwick is deciding that strategy because he thinks that the boys still need to build gradually and get better. And they really are getting better. And I'm delighted to see it.
And on the flip side, Montpellier, obviously you mentioned the emotional scenes at the end for them. We've also chatted about this in previous weeks. Is Philippe going to keep the tracksuit on, or is he going to kick back and relax now?
He was actually almost not gutted at all, but it's not what he wants. It's not what he wants. Now they've signed Bruce Reana, the former Northampton Saints guy and Bristol and all that. So he's going to come in to take care of the skills. Olivier Azam and Jean-Baptiste Elissard are staying in there. And then Philippe, because at the moment, Franck is not happening. Franck Azema. So they can't agree on a transfer, not a transfer fee, but like on a fee. And so they've called it quits. And because they're doing well, then the Montpellier president is like, well, you know, why would I break the bank? So yes, of course, Philippe says he doesn't want to do it, but he'll do it. I think it will just be a bit of a tricky one. If things don't go absolutely ideally in by November, December, then what do you do then? You can't bring somebody on his own and then you're back to square one. So that's what I think. They're making a mistake. But if there's nobody, you're not going to take somebody for the sake of it.
But you've been in this situation before, especially when things aren't going well in the club and they bring in a coach to, it's almost damage limitation. So Philippe Saint-André has come in, he stripped it back to basics. They seem to be enjoying themselves more and more. And you can see the smile they have on their faces when they're playing and they're stringing together some decent stuff. But ultimately, Philippe Saint-André doesn't want that role and doesn't want to be there and wants to be more managerial post. They're going to have to bring somebody in because there's only so much that change and the positive effect and the wave that he brings in can last.
Yeah, but they can't bring somebody in. Franck is not coming. Is this done and dusted? Franck would have not come. It all started. They announced it that Franck wasn't going after they re-signed Olivier Azam, who's done a great job, who's well liked within the changing room and the club and stuff. But now that both assistant coaches are there, it's game over.
Oh, man, it just worries me for Montpellier again. I'm like, it's a band-aid.
And to finish on the most positive of all notes, the first time for 24 years since 1997 that French teams have won both the Champions and Challenge Cups. So Benji, just shows how strong French rugby is.
Yeah, well, we've spoken about this a few times. It's a mix of the difference of, for once, all French clubs properly going at it. And that's a delight. And I couldn't be happier. So that's the reason number one. The reason number two, to be honest, and we just need to be fair to say it, Saracens are in second division. I'm not saying they would have been in the final, but they would have been serious challengers. It's a mix of those two things. And that's why it ended up being an absolutely beautiful year. And I'm chuffed for it.
Hey, it's a great time to be involved. And it's almost the perfect time for somebody to come in and do like a TV deal and put it on British and Irish TV. It'd be the icing on the cake.
Watch this space. More on that next week. Thanks, Johnny. Thanks, Benji. A massive thanks to Thibaut Flamand for joining us and sharing his incredible journey with us. And thanks to all of you guys for listening as well. Make sure you hit subscribe. Leave us a nice review if you can. And we'll be back with another episode next week. Au revoir, guys.
Cheers.
See you, fellas.
Crowd Network, a place where you belong.